Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Welcome along to our this month's Head to Head podcast. I hope that you're starting to enjoy the slightly warmer weather that's coming our way, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that perhaps the rain stays at bay. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. It's a great opportunity to really celebrate some successes and take some time to really reflect on things that are going well in schools. As I often say, we're very good at looking at the what next, which of course we need to do, but it's always important to stop, pause and really reflect on things that are going well. So today we're going to be hearing about some strategic thinking and some impactful school developments that have been taking place at Oldfield Brow Primary School. And I'm delighted to be joined by the head teacher, James Cash. Hi, James.
Hi. Hi, Sarah. You okay?
I'm good, thank you. We've finally made it. You and I have been trying to connect for this podcast for a little while now, haven't we? And various things like school life have got in the way. So I am so pleased to be here with you now. We've made it, and I really appreciate you making the time to kind of speak with me.
No problem. No problem at all.
So how are things?
Brilliant. Yeah, going well. We have, the summer term is always a term that seems to be incredibly busy. Lots of events seem to happen. I don't know why it always seems to be that case. Residential visits, other things that we just have to plan. We've just had a recent visit from Ofsted as well. We were one of eight schools in the local area that were hit within the same week. So we obviously had that earlier on in the term, which was positive. We've got a lot of things that we're looking forward to. And now's the time of year as well as obviously running towards the end of this year, where we're starting thinking about next year and moving our school and our settings forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So a good start point, as always, in these kind of sessions is to find out a little bit about you, first of all, and kind of your journey to headship, your journey to the school that you're now in, and also then a little bit about the context of Oldfield Brow. It's always a good settler, so our listeners know a bit about you and the context of the school.
Brilliant. Yeah, so I was appointed head teacher of Oldfield Brow in January 23 after a long-standing head teacher retired from a very long and successful headship. This is my second headship. I was the head teacher at a smaller school in Macclesfield. The school itself, the previous school served an area of quite significant social deprivation. And moving to Oldfield Brow has not only meant that I'm now the head of a larger school, it has also expanded the demographics of other types of families that I am working with and leading, and obviously the team are also teaching and supporting. One of the things I would say is that, despite the two relatively different contexts of schools, there are constants that I've seen between them, and that all children need to be in an environment that has incredibly high expectations for them, that systems are developed, linked with research outcomes, and are well implemented and consistently implemented. And so really, even though there are very different contexts and very different starting points, to use a phrase, there are absolute consistent values and consistent leadership styles that I feel have been useful in both my previous headship and my current headship. So when I started at Oldfield Brow, one of the things that I wanted to really sort of work on is the current values and the vision of the school. The school itself, Oldfield Brow, is well over 90 years old. It started as a small school that served a council estate, a very small estate within Altrincham. That now has changed dramatically into a school that's got a capacity of 420 people. and over a 10-year period. And something that we're very proud of and was celebrated in our recent Ofsted report was we are a very diverse school. We've got families from all over the world, from different backgrounds, and that is a real celebration for the school, really, that we've got such a broad and varied and wide community. And one of the things that I was keen to do was develop what was already a strong school, but make sure that it was really representative of the Oldfield Brow of 2023-24. And that did a huge amount of work on our branding and our logo that we worked on, and really sort of celebrating diversity within the school and making sure everybody realises that they are exceptional. And that's really the key sort of belief that we have at our school, that everybody, adults, children, are all exceptional, and, you know, making sure that they feel welcome and are supported to achieve their full potential. So we've gone on a journey, and I've described it as a new chapter, and it is a new chapter in the school's long history. And I'm very confident that the school will continue to be successful long after I've left and moved on. But it's a new chapter, and something that we are really excited about.
Oh, sounds great. So you've not been at the school a huge amount of time, but I know you've been working really hard, and the starting with vision and values is always a good start point. And it's not necessarily kind of baby out with the bathwater, but it is for school leaders, so wider than just you as head, but wider school leaders, really having that clarity of what you're doing and why, and then getting kind of that engagement and buy-in from the school community. So it isn't just about your staff and the children, it's also the families, isn't it? And I know when I came to visit, I think the first time we probably met, at the time you were doing a lot to engage with the parents particularly, and kind of take them on that journey of the kind of high aspirations and the vision and values that you've developed, and actually building those relationships with them as well, because of course taking on a new school, you're a new person, so you have to build those relationships with the wider community as well, don't you?
Absolutely. And one of the things I was very mindful of was that I didn't want to come in with a set of vision and values that were about me as the head. It had to reflect the current school and the current context. So when I was talking to parents about, you know, what values, what do you see as key to the success of the school, and, you know, the values that you want your children to take forward as they move through into secondary school and life, some parents said, well, what do you want? What do you want? What do you believe? And I was like, it's not about me. It isn't. It's about the community. And I wanted to make sure that we got every stakeholder in the school involved in this, because this isn't just about trying to create a carbon copy model of what happened in my previous school. There are aspects, obviously, that I said are transferable. And there are things I did in that setting that, you know, I'm implementing the same things here in terms of high expectations and well thought out strategies, and making sure that they are really well implemented. But the vision values of a school has to be linked with that school and the unique community that it serves. And so I'm really proud of the fact that the vision and values that we have created is bespoke to Oldfield Brow of Oldfield Brow 2024. But by the time we go to 2050, it might need to be looked at again. It needs to be sometimes reviewed. But it's something that has come from the community. And to support with that, I was in a lucky position to engage with an external company that sort of was a third party, so to speak. So I was able to sort of enable, be that facilitator, lead surveys with parents and staff, and gather that information on a third party basis. So it wasn't just something seen that it was driven by me, but obviously it was my decision to relook at that after such a long period of time and make sure that we've all got a shared vision moving forward at the school.
Great. Sounds really powerful and interesting to hear that you kind of engaged in that third party support to really drive that forward. And it's clearly having impact, because I know you were very recently inspected, but I also know from the information that you've shared on your website that was something that came out very strongly within the inspection. I think the opening lines was very much reflective of your vision and values and about the children in the community. So you must be really proud of that.
Yeah, we are very much so. And we do feel that the children are benefiting from this as well. And, you know, their understanding, that came through in the inspection in such a short time, really, since this has been fully implemented, children talking about the values and applying them to a range of contexts. And just to give you an example, this is within early years as well. So we've got children within early years in year one to quote saying, "My favourite school value is respect, because that means that we have to be really kind to each other and kindness is important." That's the people voice coming from that early years. Even one of my year one pupils told her parents that after watching the Barbie movie, if they just understood the Equality Act, then there wouldn't be any issues that they're seeing within that film. So if a 5 and 6 year old is able to talk about those vision and that values and, you know, those things, is quite inspirational, I think, for adults to sort of take that as as a key driver for themselves. Maybe listen to our children instead of thinking that we know it all as adults.
Great. So in kind of 14 months, you've done a huge amount of work around that, but also other things as well. So what have been your other highlights? What have you been focusing on to kind of either strengthen or develop in your school?
Obviously early years was a key aspect that I wanted to focus on for two reasons. The first one is more about myself. So before I became head teacher, I taught mainly within Key Stage 2. I taught across the primary phase, but I was mainly in Key Stage 2 and mainly a year 6 teacher. And what struck me year on year on year was, the children that perhaps weren't where we needed them to be, was because they didn't have that strong foundation within early years. And I often say about early years, foundation stage, you know, is the foundations for building. And so when I moved into headship, even though I haven't had direct experience of early years, one of the things that I wanted to make sure was that that was a key formation of our strategy to improve the school from the bottom up, if that makes sense. We're lucky here at Oldfield Brow, our outcomes are positive. However, what we need to make sure we do is that the temptation sometimes is to stick a plaster results, sometimes put in a lot of resource further up the school so that we have better results, because we know how accountable we are for our results and in terms of Ofsted. But the right thing to do and the moral thing to do is to make sure that actually we are providing that real strong foundation for our children. It will take longer to see that longer term impact. But actually, and that doesn't mean that we forget children further up the school. That's not what I'm saying. But strategically making sure that we think about the foundations and making sure that they've got the absolute core for their success. And at Oldfield Brow, the school was seen as good, but early years did come out in 2019 as requires improvement. And that to me was also a key area that I wanted to work on within there. Within the school, but also linked really closely with my passions as to what I believe is important. Also a key element of that as well, and the pedagogy that goes into early years, I think we can learn a lot in terms of that high quality interactions that, you know, we don't always see further up school. And so there's been a huge focus on that adaptive teaching element and making sure that staff are able to have quality interactions in year 3, 4, 5 and 6. Supporting children and adapting that teaching and adapting that learning further up the school, building on that excellent practice within early years. Because even though they're different phases, there's still overarching principles that transcend all of those phases. And that's really, really important to share. In my headship as well, and the conversations, early years can sometimes be seen as a secret garden. And that, you know, I'm aware that Some people avoid early years because it seems like, you know, children aren't sat at tables and aren't learning from a board. And also, as a leader, I also challenged previous, and that's not the case here at Oldfield Brow, but previous assumptions that it's different in early years. It's different down here. It's not different. We're all teaching the children. The approaches might be different in what we're doing, but actually making sure that we've got that seamless transition from early years into the rest of the school, understanding that what they learn there is the foundation of what's going to happen for the next 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 years of learning is really important. So I've also tried to remove that barrier that I sometimes see from early years practitioners that sort of don't see themselves as part of the school and don't see themselves as actually a key part of the school. And that's been part of what I think has been really successful and has really integrated them as part of that. And when we were inspected, I had my early years lead with me on my 60-minute phone call because I wanted them to know that everything that we've done in school has started from early years, is firmly rooted in there, and also spreading some of the great practice that, as I say, is just part of normal pedagogy within the early years environment.
Yeah, great. And it's so good to hear that recognition of the foundation stage making that difference further through the school. And like you say, it's almost a slow burn in some respects, isn't it? And you have to hold your nerve doing that and over time. And of course, you still will be rightly supporting those other year groups. But over time, what they will need in those other year groups will be very different based on the strength of the experiences that the children have had in those foundation stages. I know I often talk about, and I often make an analogy to a tree, that if we've nurtured those roots and really helped them to go deep and have nourishment and warmth and care so that they can dig deep and make connections, actually that tree is much more likely to weather a storm in future years than actually if those foundations and that nurturing care hasn't kind of taken place. And that's very much what you're talking about. So in terms of practicalities for early years and the development journey that's taken place, I know yourself and obviously your early years lead Charlotte has been heavily involved in driving improvement. What kind of practical things have taken place? What things have developed down there on either a very kind of an environment basis? Was it adult interactions? Is it curriculum? Is it all of those? What was part of the journey?
I think one of the obviously within early excellence, that understanding of the adult, the environment and the child, and that interaction is really important. So when we looked at early years, I was not making sure that we took one and not the others, if that makes sense. So what we wanted to make sure was, first of all, that the environment was correct for the children, and that it had the right resources in there to ensure that they had the skills that they needed, you know, had the opportunity to develop across the entire curriculum effectively. One of the things that we challenged as well was that understanding of where is it, you know, child-led and child-led versus child-initiated. And I think for me, one of the things that I wanted to get and something that Charlotte's worked incredibly hard on is actually a curriculum and understanding, even though there's an element of interest led approaches within early years and something, you know, if the children, as you know, I'm talking to someone who knows them very well. But instead of it just being all what the children want to do, all what the children see, there needs to be an element of teacher leading that and ensuring that we're providing that progressive curriculum. So our curriculum is broken down into milestones. It's broken down into what we expect children to achieve within, you know, at the end of each half term, to ensure that, you know, as leaders of learning, as the adults in the learning environment, we are ensuring that there's no lost learning, that there's no gaps within knowledge, and also to ensure that we're confident that the children are making strong progress. As I said, that journey, because of the nature of early years, you know, might look different depending on the cohorts, the children that you have, and the interests that they have. So we really define that into a teacher-led, child-initiated environment where the teacher leads the learning, that's their role, or leads where they need to go to. But it's the implementation, I suppose, is through the children's interests and what that would look like. Also, one of the things that I've really focused on here is that quality interaction. So within school, I've deliberately over technically overstaffed my early years with adults compared to, you know, ratios that you have. And one of my previous early years leaders said, there's ratios for safety and ratios for learning. And actually, you know, when you've got ratios for learning, the only way in which children are going to develop those communication language skills is if they've got, you increase the number of times that they're actually being exposed to effective communication and language. So again, that's a bold decision. It's a decision that perhaps further up the school, people might feel that early years are getting a bit of special treatment. But actually, when you get the results that we're getting at the moment, and we're getting really strong outcomes in, you know, in the core subjects, for want of a better phrase, the benefits for the school in the long run will be huge, and ultimately the children will be huge. So being brave, really, in terms of, you know, if you're leaving quality interactions, you need to increase the number of times adults are going to talk to the children and initiate with them and talk with them around it. The other thing as well that I'm really keen to do is we've put a lot of research proven practice into everyday practice. So I'm really a huge believer in inclusive quality first teaching, you know, not removing children to do interventions per se, but actually developing our practice to ensure that that becomes standard practice. So we've just launched Helicopter Stories, for example, which is an EEF research-proven communication and language strategy, which the children adore and love. And we're seeing some brilliant examples of children now coming away from home, initiating their own writing their own stories, coming into school, loving performing, loving sharing that. And we've also introduced Word Aware, or in early years version of Concept Cat. So the children are getting really strong foundation of language. They're going home with stickers on, ask me about these words, ask me about what this means. And the parents are saying that's brilliant in terms of being able to bring that learning home, but also making sure the children have got something that they can talk about. And we talked a lot about, you know, stripping back a little bit as well within early years and making sure that you know, the need to know and the need to know aspects. So, you know, what do the children need to know, and making sure that we teach that well. What will they learn via osmosis? What will they learn because that's part of what their topic is? And making sure that we don't sort of skip that anchor. You know, in word aware terms, it's Goldilocks knowledge for words that are step on words or step on language that are nice to know, but not something that the children need to know within the foundation. So an example was about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are very popular, generally seems to be a popular choice. But teaching the children about the word extinct, for example, when actually as an adult, if I was to ask us to explain what that meant, perhaps isn't as important as some other vocabulary. So being careful about what we explicitly teach and what the children will, I'm not saying the children won't hear that word, because they should, and that's important, but not worrying too much around that sort of deeper understanding at that time, if that makes sense.
And as you say, that I think the key phrase there is at that time, because at some point in that child's journey, that piece of vocabulary will become more pertinent and they will need a deeper knowledge of that. But what you're rightly saying is at the point of teaching, for this instance, in early years, as a school, you've decided that word can be exposed. The children will be exposed to that, but actually they don't need to learn that. There are other words from your school's point of view that actually are a priority for you. And again, it sounds like there's absolute clarity. It's back to lots of clarity about your vision and values, lots of clarity about your curriculum, lots of clarity in terms of what you're looking to achieve, but also a deeper clarity in the understanding of what children do need and how they learn, and adults leading learning as well as following learning. That's really vital. And you talked around that. And I think it's really interesting to hear, because you started at the start of this session kind of saying, I'm not an early year specialist. My experience is in other key stages, yet you talk very passionately and very knowledgeably about early years. So where does that knowledge kind of come from? How have you gained all of those insights and managed to kind of pull all of that into how you're approaching teaching and learning?
I think for me, you know, just because I'm a head teacher doesn't mean I know everything. And so what I'm passionate about is if I don't know about it, I find out about it. So obviously I've gone on courses. I've attended them. You know, I'm not above going on an early years training course to understand what needs to happen and what things look like. I engage with experts as well. We are an outward facing school. Obviously, yourself at Early Excellence, but we work closely with the English Hub, local English Hub, the NCECM Maths Hub. So we're working with outside agencies to try and develop that understanding of what excellent practice is. And I suppose for me as the head, it's just being, I've got a very strong and exceptional early years lead. So making sure I've got somebody who has got that intricate knowledge, you know, strategically placing them in areas that I'm not necessarily as strong with. But also not being afraid to learn myself and not being afraid to ask those questions. And there are things that Charlotte, my early years lead, knows that I don't know. And I ask her questions and I want to find out that information. I suppose it's being inquisitive. And like I said, I'm not saying this for all colleagues at all. And I'm sure there's some equally passionate out there in early years. But I've seen some settings where it's seen as a secret garden, where they like it being seen as a secret garden, like, you know, you don't know what goes on down here. And whereas others view it in that way, they're always all different in early years. It's slightly different implementation, but the principles of that implementation are exactly the same. So for me, it's just being really conscious about developing an understanding of the things I don't know, having key people and exceptional people in the positions that I know will be able to lead that area really well. And I suppose asking the right questions, what does that mean? What does that look like? What does a good early writing curriculum need to include? What does, you know, looking at outcomes? I'm not being afraid to ask that. And I think as a head, you can sometimes feel or be expected to know everything. And you're sometimes expected to know that everything is how everything works, and you don't. Asking for help, asking for clarity, asking for questions is also important. And so I have developed my knowledge through spending time in the classroom and the environment, talking to experts, and also being active in my own professional development to ensure that I'm able to offer advice and support as needed. So and that passion is very much there.
And it's clearly making a difference, because by embarking on that professional development journey, by engaging in those professional discussions with colleagues in school as well as out of school, really thinking strategically, posing those questions, doing your research, it's informing your school strategy, yes, for early years, but also beyond as well. And I would imagine that there's lots of professional conversations and dialogues that are taking place. So it's well worth it, isn't it, is what we're saying.
Absolutely. So just to give you another example further up the school, so we've just implemented a new phonics scheme. Again, that was something that necessarily our data wouldn't suggest we needed to do. But it's, you know, understanding what a good early reading curriculum is more than just passing the phonics screening check. It's developing all those different aspects. So engaging with the English Hub. We took the brave decision to move to a new scheme because we felt the scheme that we had, even though it was validated, didn't. It was more focused on the phonics test and not developing that early reading curriculum. So even we also took the decision, I know that's easier to bring somebody out of class to really support that implementation throughout the year, which has seen fabulous results, accelerated learning, but also that member of staff has now been asked to become a literacy specialist and advisor themselves after only 12 months of that time being in school. So because that's been, you know, so successful in the implementation. And I suppose one of the things, you know, we do get a lot of is pressure to implement things. For me, it's making sure that you identify it's not rocket science. I know when I'm talking to heads, they'll know all this, but you identify the need that you know, you're confident where it is. Research outcomes, look at the research-based approaches. See what you need to focus on and make sure it's really well implemented and that you plan for that implementation. And a frustration that I find a lot in terms of, and I think this is driven perhaps by our accountability framework, is that we often look within academic years for school improvement. We often, most of our school improvement plans are within 12 months, when in reality, when you're going through all the stages, it really is 2 to 3, 4 years when you're really going to see that impact moving forward. And even though I have got a 12-month school improvement plan, that is rooted within a wider 3 to 5 year strategy of knowing where we're going in the school, what that and making sure that implementation leads to embedded and sustained impact. And I suppose that's why an investment in early years is so important. You're not going to get those instant results. You're not going to get those key stage two results that, you know, you might need to see, because perhaps your resources are going within early years. But that being effectively implemented, it will take time, but you will get stronger results as a result of that.
And of course, the EEF, you mentioned the EEF as one of your go-tos for kind of research and things. And again, they've got a huge amount of resources and support on there around school development. And they do very much talk around that cycle and that process and giving time. We have to give the children time to embed learning. And actually, we need to give ourselves time. And it's a balance, isn't it, as with many things, in terms of the need for rapid improvement, as well as that kind of long-term building capacity and strategic plans. So, yes, I know lots of schools, myself included, when I was head, had an annual development plan. But equally, as you've just described, lifting that from a 3 to 5 year plan so you can see your direction of travel, because that also helps you to hold true, I think, to what you've identified as real school priorities. And therefore, when new things are thrown into the ring, because often new things appear that perhaps schools are asked to do, or some schools are using that other schools and say, oh, we should try that, everyone should be doing it. If you've got that overarching strategic plan, 3 to 5 years, you can then stand back and think, okay, is this new something that's been thrown into the ring, is that going to have impact on the development plan? Do we need it, or is it just a flash in the pan and actually we're going to carry on the journey that we're on? And you've used the phrase be brave, and that is part of it's about knowing your why, isn't it? Always the why behind you doing things, and always going back to that and being brave to hold your nerve on what you are doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, and it's easy to wobble. It is easy to wobble, and it's easy to see in the news about accountability measures and all the other things. It is easy to wobble. And, you know, it requires a strength of character. It requires a governing board or trust board that sort of supports you in that vision. And also one of the things that I think has been really successful and was, you know, with our office of inspection and very proud of the staff who were able to articulate our vision so clearly was that communication that staff understand that this is not just a flash in the pan. It's not just something that, you know, the latest fad that comes along. It's rooted in clear research outcomes, and it's rooted from the point of view of improving things for the children. And one of the things that our school, all our staff have worked incredibly hard. I'm not going to say that the last 12 months have been easy. We've worked really, really hard. But one of the things that staff have always said is, we've worked hard, but we know why we're working hard. We know why it needs to happen. And that for me is a real, you know, makes me feel very proud that even that this, they're not doing it because they're being told to, they're doing it because they believe in it and are seeing the impact of it as well. And that is really important. And yes, we've had our offset inspection, and, you know, we are at a point now where we are, you know, celebrating a positive outcome. But what we said as a senior leadership team is that we weren't doing this for Ofsted. We weren't doing this for that. Obviously, that's positive that we've got a positive outcome. So we are going to be continuing on that journey. But what it does give us is maybe a little bit more time now to really implement it and embed it more and make sure that it's having a really long-lasting impact on our children.
Yeah. So that actually seamlessly takes us into, so what next then? What next for Old Field Brown? Not necessarily just early years, but actually as a school, what's next in your mind? What is it that you're kind of wanting to either embed or start new, or the next phase?
One of the things that we're really confident with now is that we want to become an oracy school. So we really want to focus on oracy within our school. For lots of, again, based on the early years principles, I know but it is, you know, oracy is important. And I think there's a lot of research, well, I know there's a lot of research that proves that young people's outcomes in later life and their success is very much linked, obviously, with being able, the reading is important, but also their ability to articulate their thoughts and feelings. And I realize I've got stronger at articulating them as this podcast has moved on. But oracy is key. So but again, this is about really good implementation. So we went down to London to take part in the speaking summit with Voice 21. Heard from other schools and experts about their oracy journey, and then looking to make sure that, you know, we're developing that strategy now. I've got an oracy lead within school, and then engaging with Voice 21. I'm not a Voice 21 advocate. I'm just saying that, but engaging with the right people to ensure that that implementation is really, really effective, and thinking about, so we're going to be focusing on teaching and developing and embedding oracy within teaching, and then actually then looking really closely at the oracy within the curriculum, because, you know, something I've learned is that there's a lot of skills that we need to teach our children to become really, really strong. Our school also has a very high EAL percentage of children. That's very different to my previous demographic. But again, both sets of schools would benefit from oracy. And one of the things I love about this is about, it's not about oracy in the view of speaking the King's English, in terms of it's about giving children, being proud of their voice, being proud of their accent, being proud of where they're from, but giving them the confidence to articulate their views, thoughts, feelings, and learning, and be really, really impactful and being confident to add to the world in whatever way they feel that they should. So, yeah, we're moving very much onto an oracy focus next year, developing that across the school. That includes as well the launch of a forest school, which we've just had a successful fundraising event for. Our teachers and colleagues have just gone up the Yorkshire Three Peaks and raised over £7,000 for our forest school, which is an amazing achievement. And really, really proud of our school community. So developing that provision as well. It's going to take years. We know it's going to take a good 2 to 3 years of implementation and hard work. But to quote our vision, we want our children to have the skills and knowledge to thrive in a changing world. And we feel strongly that oracy and the children to be able to articulate those skills and that knowledge is essential for them to be able to thrive at Oldfield Brown and beyond.
Quite right. Really powerful. Oh, it's been really good to hear just about the story of Oldfield Brown. And I'm thinking all the way through, you started by saying you started there in January 2023. It really isn't that long ago in terms of, we know how rapidly school time passes. We work in week blocks, don't we, for half term, the next half term and moving through. And, you know, it sounds like you've got lots of things really well established. And that's testament to the work that you've done, but also, yes, of course, your team. But you are leading that and kind of setting the standards and thinking outside the box, and as you say, being brave and looking at other things and researching. So it sounds like you and the school have achieved such a huge amount that is having such impact not only on the children but on the community. So very well done to you. And actually, we've talked about the inspection throughout, and that's not what the focus of this podcast is about, but I feel, you know, you must be so pleased to have had that inspection outcome to validate all of the hard work for you and the team and to celebrate for the children and families.
Absolutely. It was a validation, as you can imagine, coming into a school after 21 years of long and successful headship. I've come in, a new head's come in and has made changes. And I feel I've definitely brought the community along with me on that journey. There are some, as you can imagine, who hanker for the old days, who don't necessarily like some of the things. They're generally the older family, or the families that have been at school the longest, or maybe our older families in terms of year 5 and 6. But that offset inspection just sort of really gave a rubber stamp to what we're doing is right, and it's making it is impactful. We're doing this for the right reasons, which is for the children, and making sure that they get an exceptional education, because they are exceptional, to quote a phrase.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I know that kind of we're working together, and you've been very good. You haven't mentioned once that you are an Early Excellence Partner School, so I'm just going to put that out there so you can kind of celebrate that for a moment. So there'll be events happening and things. But funnily enough, we were talking just before this podcast started about actually connecting with other schools, and I know obviously in terms of your outward looking work, you enjoy kind of engaging with not just heads but other settings, other schools, because you're a big believer in learning from each other. So I feel sure there'll be lots of people listening to this who might want to have a look at your website and maybe find out more. And of course there's a case study, isn't there, from your early years developments, as a case study of the work that again, whilst it was initially Early Excellence that were involved, it was back to, that was almost a day, that was all we did. You and the team and Charlotte kind of have driven improvements. So again, that's a really good read for anybody who's kind of interested, but I'm sure people may well want to connect and find out more. So I'd definitely signpost them to your website for sure.
I love, and we haven't got, you know, we're constantly learning. So I see it as a privilege going to visit other schools, other settings, and seeing what they do. And I think actually, the more we can do that as heads and as colleagues, the more we can get out, the more we can see and talk and actually remember why we do the job. Sometimes that can be a bit distracting with things that happen. Really sort of strengthens our practice, because ultimately, whether you're in a school in Altrincham or a school in London, we're all teachers and we're all there for the children. So sharing that practice is key. So more than welcome. And it'd be great if I could go and see other schools as well. Why not?
No, well, there you go. You know, this podcast goes out on Apple and Spotify and lots of other providers and platforms. So that's out there now, James. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, and good luck with the kind of future developments. And I shall look forward to hearing how that project around RSC develops, and also your Forest School as well. So good luck with it all, and do pass on my best to the rest of the team.
I will do, Sarah. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.